Welcome back to The Big Three, everybody. This October, we are dropping brand new interviews every single week. And to kick things off, Joe sat down with Alois and Aloisa Roof at Motorlux to talk about the family business, their Porsche connection, and the debut of the new Roof Tribute. Super badass car. Buckle up. It's going to be a good one.
All right, welcome back to The Big Three. We have a great treat for you today. We have the Roof family with us, Alois and Aloisa. Thank you guys so much for being here. This is an amazing opportunity. We are in the Roof booth at Motorlux right now. This is like a surreal moment for me. I've been a huge Roof fan since Gran Turismo.
Thank you.
Growing up with that video game.
Wonderful.
The story goes that Porsche wasn't lending their licensing to Sony at the time, so you guys jumped in and lent the Roof name to the game, and that's how everyone kind of, in the U.S. at least, fell in love with your brand.
Yamauchi-san, who was the inventor of the game, he insisted that the Roof Yellowbird will be in the game.
Oh, wow.
So it was not a jump in because Porsche didn't.
It was because of the fandom.
We were the choice.
There's a huge Roof following in Japan, right?
There we go.
Yes.
And so they approached you and were like, we want to have the Yellowbird in the game.
Yamauchi-san said, Yellowbird has to be in it. And he sent his people to Germany from Sony.
That's so
to
cool.
Negotiate with us. Yes.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, he famously was very meticulous with every part of the game. He went and scanned the tracks for the texture and stuff. It's such an honor to have your car in a game that was so influential to so many different people.
It was the beginning of a new era, you know, that people drive now at home and enjoy it on the screen.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's so real, you know, and it has been improved and improved. And today it feels almost like you're in the car, you know.
Now, definitely. Now, so far removed from that moment, looking back at it, how was it an easy decision to say yes to it, or was it kind of like a gamble?
Well, my wife did all the negotiation with Sony, and she actually had experience with the media. She worked in a television station, and she was selling air time, so she knows how important that is.
That's awesome.
And she says, if Roof will be in a video game, it will spread the name everywhere, which actually happened. It all happened today. I come to places, and they say, oh, are you affiliated with this company that has the Yellowbird, you know, the video game and so on? I said, yeah, it's me, actually.
That's awesome. That's great foresight.
Yeah, no, that was so important. And I thank her forever for that, what she put together here. She understood it and she knew it was an opportunity. It was an opportunity for Sony and it was an opportunity for us. And it worked out
absolutely
very well. Yes, thank you.
Well, it's so cool to find out that Roof is such a family business. Like, you are a very small operation. You make only 30 cars a year now,
That's
right?
correct, yeah.
Estonia is part of the business as well. And Aloisa, you are kind of taking on the reins now. I listened to The Smoking Tire and I was really tickled to find out that you're like in the assembly line.
Yes.
Learning as the engines get put together, as the car gets put together. How is that experience for you?
Well, I think it's absolutely important. It's you know, I grew up in the family business and I was always part of the development in the sense that I always got to eavesdrop and see. And it's been quite the jump to actually go from all the stations that we have. So since I was about 15 years old, I was working in the restoration department. Then I was actually cleaning the cars. Then I was with the housekeeping department. And I've been pretty much in the parts department, pretty much worked through all of it just to try to understand each perspective, which I think is the most important thing to do, is to fully understand each element of the business.
Absolutely.
And for about the last 2 months, I've been full-time in the business. I finished my master's program, and I've been more on the marketing side now, unfortunately, a little less wrenching. But I'm still in the production of the SCR and the Rodeo, trying to learn how to optimize it.
I love the Rodeo.
Thank you.
I'm sure it helps from a marketing standpoint, too, to like know your product very well.
Of course.
Know it in and out, and be able to kind of like answer the harder questions when people press you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, like anybody that comes from a family business knows that you wear more than one hat. There's no such thing as just having one title. You do a little bit of everything at some point in time.
What a magical way to grow up too. Like, and to provide that for her too. And I think that's so cool. And my dad was an insurance salesman, so I wanted to get as far away from that family business as possible. Roof kind of started with the quick blow, right? Seeing one of the Porsches pass one of your buses
right.
in the 60s, correct?
But at that time, I had no idea what quick blow was. Neither did I know the name quick blow, or did I know that it was a 901 prototype. It was just happened to be the first time that I listened to the sound of a 911.
That's amazing.
That was amazing, yeah.
Pfaffenhausen is very close to Stuttgart, right?
Relatively, 1.5 hours.
Yeah. So being in proximity to the Porsche plant,
yeah.
you were probably on the forefront of seeing them on the road.
Well, our Porsche story started in 1963 when my father was driving his tour bus, which was actually a vehicle that he built himself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he was driving on a November day, and he was passed by a Porsche 356.
Oh, a little speedster?
A red Karmann hardtop.
Oh, hardtop.
Karmann hardtop, which is known over here as the Notchback 356.
Yes.
Yeah. And that driver lost control over the car after he was passing. He made too many movements on the steering wheel, obviously.
Yeah.
And the 356 doesn't like that.
And it just...
So he lost control. He ended up in the ditch and rolled the car twice.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. My father stopped.
Did he survive?
After the driver. No, the guy was fine.
Okay.
He had a couple of cuts from the glass. He took him to the hospital to make sure that everything's fine. And he said, so when you're calmed down, we talk. I will bring your car to the shop. It will be in dry environment. So don't worry about the car. He explained to him that my dad had a workshop. And so all of this happened. A couple of days later, my father ended up buying the wrecked car and fixed it. And it became our first Porsche.
Wow. That's such a crazy story.
Yeah, that was a great story. It's a, when you think about it, my father fell in love with Porsche. Of course, I was already, you know. I didn't have to drive it. I was 13 years young, you know, at that time. You know, it was just part of my life. And then a year later, we sold that car with another great story about it, because we didn't want to sell the car. We were not ready and not prepared on a Sunday. Suddenly, somebody walks up to us in Munich, says, I want to buy your car. An hour later, we were driving home with this gentleman's own Porsche, had the money in cash. We didn't have any car papers with us, of course not, because we were not prepared to sell. And then we said, these Porsche people, they are irrational and crazy. The blind trust that they have. But we realized what kind of a species of a person it is, what kind of personalities.
And you were able to eventually feed into that.
Yes. And we said, we have to stay in that world. We continued it, you know?
So it was like meeting these kind of people was like a little bit scary. And you're like, I don't know about this guy. But then you're like, something about these people is a little bit attractive. And I want to feed into that.
But you know, at that time, the roof company was a nobody. We were not known.
Well, you were a service shop.
Outside of 6 miles, we were not known. Let's put it this way. We were in Faraway at that time, Faraway, Munich. And this guy gives us this blind trust that we said, this is unbelievable. We've never sold a car like that. My dad was shocked, you know. Got a good price. Everything was straight. Everything was fine. And on top of all, he loans us his 356 for us to drive home.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
that's like one of those stories you hear now in 2025. And you're like, there is no way that happened.
Hard to imagine.
If they wrote that into a movie, they'd be like, that's too unbelievable. Let's cut that part out.
Very true, yeah.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
Aside from these first couple interactions with Porsche drivers, what was the reason that you started specializing in Porsches?
Passion. We wanted to continue doing business with Porsche cars, because we realized that the owners and these people are passionate people, and this makes more fun than if you have to deal with people that only need cars for transportation, you know? So we were hanging around these people, we're staying with that, they were coming to us, and we became sort of a hub or a nest for all these people hanging around with us. At that time, you must not forget, the Porsche brand was not as exploited as it is today. At that time, a Porsche was such a rare vehicle. If you saw one once a month, it was big.
It was that rare?
Yeah.
Wow.
But the brand was only 14 years old, you know, and most of the cars went to the States. So the few cars that stayed in Germany, they were really rare. You would have to come to a big city, to a grand hotel, someplace where you would finally get to see one. You know, it was a real rare vehicle.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the 356, that was your first car?
Well, not really. I didn't have a driver license. I couldn't drive it. My first Porsche was in 1968. My father bought a wrecked Porsche 911 that was missing an engine. And the rear end was
This was the one that ended up being the prototype?
Yeah, we learned that.
I've heard about this. Yeah, yeah, the 901.
That was the 901 Quick Blow.
Okay, but it had been repainted?
Well, at that time, as a young kid, I was 18. And the car was finished when I was 19 at Easter of 1969. I had the car prepared to my gusto. I didn't like the original color of the car. I said, this is boring. I wanted to have blue metallic, which was the latest top color en vogue for the 911.
He wanted it to look like an S.
And I dressed it up as a 911 S, although it had only a 912 four-cylinder engine in it. And my dad said, the 912 engine is enough for you.
Yes.
In that age. And he was damn right.
Yeah, that's funny. A 912 right. That looks like a 911S.
There's worse things.
I made it look like a 911S.
It's funny because I feel like purists now would be like, oh, that's sacrilegious.
Of course.
Kind of doing that kind
of
stuff.
From today's, but you know, you change your glasses every once in a while, you know. You see things differently.
That's a good saying. So your first car was this Quick Blow.
Yeah.
What was your first Porsche?
Well, adjacent to this story, this is a great transition. So like his father told him when he turned 18, a six-cylinder engine is too strong, too powerful. At around when I was 16, I asked my dad, you know, all my friends were starting to get cars and their driver's license. I said, so what's my first car going to be? And he said, well, you fix it, you drive it.
Oh.
And he gave me a beautiful donor 912 from 1968. Very authentic, a lot of patina.
Not the same car.
Not Quick Blow. Goodness, no. But a car that he had bought here actually from a friend in Pebble Beach.
And then shipped it back?
Yes. Shipped it back. California car. Almost no rust.
Yeah.
And that was actually the beginning when I was fully wrenching in the company.
How long did it take you to get it up and running?
About 6 months to
oh,
8 months.
Oh, that's fast.
To get it running, to get it look pretty, about a year and a half. So it started off just the engine work. We took out the engine. The transmission was perfectly functioning. And then, you know, those cars are ever-ending projects. So I took it on my first run, decided, oh, it's absolutely, you know, rain comes in all the time. The ceilings need change. So I took out the rear windows and I said, oh, the headliner is too original. So I had to fix the headliner because it was truly falling off and my passenger seat had the main spring come out.
Oh, no.
Like it was truly
this
was
like a junker
car.
That you're bringing back to life.
So I brought it back to life and I think now I'm pretty much at a point where it runs beautifully.
Oh, you still have it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
I try to daily it in the summer.
And how does it work as a daily?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
And does the AC?
Pardon? No.
No AC?
No AC. Windows down. I live in Germany.
Oh, yeah. It's different in California.
I know.
If you don't live near, like on the beach, you're going to need AC.
I know.
You have to breeze.
Especially here in the valley.
All right. Going back to the 60s, what made you look at a 911 and say, I think I can make this better?
Well, at that time, I was only studying. I was learning. I saw the different versions that the Porsche factory made for their Kunden Sportabteilung, you know, which was sort of the racing division and rally division for customers. And I saw the 911 ST when this came out and all these different versions. And then in 1973, the RS happened, which was really the highlighted 911, the best version of all times.
Definitely.
You know, and I loved them. I loved these cars and I wanted to be part of this. And we made all kinds of versions for the customers, whatever they wanted. And then something in the 70s happened that was called 928. People have forgotten that the 928 was a supposed to be the successor of the 9/11.
Yeah, they were going to phase out the 9/11, yeah. Which is crazy to think about now. Yeah,
crazy to think about.
Yeah.
So the 9/11 was put in death row, and I said, this cannot be. And the customers also, I mean, the diehards, they said, nothing wrong with the 928. It's a fantastic car, but it's a different car.
It's different.
Yeah.
Beast altogether.
And from the Porsche side, they said, yeah, it's outdated. Engine in the rear, no good heater, too noisy, and all kinds of arguments to kill their own product, you know. And I said, no, this cannot be. Customers were upset. They said, Mr. Roof, can you build me a 911 in 10 years from now? Let's buy a body shell and all the bits and pieces and so on. I said, well, don't worry. If they stop building the 911, we're going to build one.
So when did you, it was during the 70s when you started getting bodies in white?
Yeah. This is when we started buying bodies in white, and we built cars from ground up. And then in the early 80s, we became a car manufacturer. And we became a car manufacturer sort of stumbling into this because we were asked that we should give our cars our own name and chassis number for liability reasons. And so we did it this way. Now we're there for over 40 years as a car manufacturer.
Yeah.
And I would not have imagined at that time that roof cars would be so wanted and so sought after, which we are very proud of to see what's happening in auctions and customers really appreciate the work that we did already at that time and for our older cars that are around.
That's such an elegant tribute to you as a family to see how people hang on to these things, how much they go for at auctions.
Right.
Did it break your heart when you saw the black one fall off the car carrier? Was that
it
just
broke
heartbreaking?
My heart several times. But I know we can also fix it. But we know we can fix it again.
Are you going to... It hasn't been fixed yet?
No, the car just arrived again.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the damage? What are we looking at?
It's, I cannot make a big comment on that. We just received it last week, and I had a 10-minute look at it.
Okay.
We have to put it on the equipment and machines, and then we see what needs to be done. Yeah.
It didn't look too bad from the pictures.
No.
So I'm hopeful that it's not too
bad. Yeah. That was so painful.
I know.
We'll be right back after these messages. Now back to the show.
What would you say is Roof's philosophy when building a car?
Yeah, the philosophy is very clear to keep it simple, you know. Make it as light as possible. Make it feel that the car is part of you. And not you are riding on something because you're riding in something that is part of you, yourself.
Like an extension of your own body.
Right. Another extremity.
Yeah, that's really cool. There are moments when you're really pushing your cars. You push these cars to their limit.
I do.
And there is a moment where you're doing stuff with all of your limbs.
Yeah.
You're perceiving with your eyes and you're trying to predict turns and stuff. And it does feel like it is an extension of your own body. And I feel like that is something you guys are still producing those type of cars in 2025 that is unfortunately fading from the more commercial market. Are you seeing kind of a resurgence with people, you know, like, renewed interest maybe or more orders?
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at your generation, you sit here and you say you're the video game generation. You know, you grew up and people are going back to demanding or being inspired by the analog experience. When everything has become so autonomous, you crave for something that's real, whether that be, I don't know, just to digress a little bit from cars, whether that be from real connection versus social media,
yes,
to driving electric, to actually be in control of the car that you're driving. And to add on to the extension of what he was saying, I think our main focus of our cars is drivability. Yes, they're strong. Yes, they're powerful. But they won't, you know, scream and be loud when you're in traffic in the middle of the city. Like, they're very drivable.
That's a really cool philosophy as far as, like, making it check all the boxes for comfort and performance and reliability.
And you see so many other car companies are going back to manual and offering manual cars.
Yeah. And now it's at a point where technology has made those manuals so good. You know, for a while, manual was if you knew how to use it correctly, was faster than automatic. Then automatic caught up to it and became better than, you know, faster than manual for a while. Now it's coming to a point where, like, maybe it's splitting where it's based on what the driver wants as an experience out of it now.
Yeah.
Where you can get the PDKs if you want, but, like, you know, a manual gearbox is...
The question is, do you want to drive the car or do you want the car to drive you?
That's a good point.
I think that's the easiest way to film.
I just realized that I'm wearing pretty roof close green. To roof green, green right now. Yes. That was not intentional.
Oh, you should own it.
But this is one of my favorite shades of green.
Okay.
And obviously
apply
roof
for
has,
a job with us.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, you guys hiring? This is my 2-week notice right now if you are hearing this. No, but I've always loved roof merchandising. And our director, Max, has this like cable knit green sweater with a roof emblem on it.
Oh, yeah.
And I've always been jealous of it. You are kind of taking the reins on the new merch drops now, right?
Yes, I am.
What can roof fans expect in fall of 2025?
Well, we're actually currently working on releasing a new collection.
Oh, awesome.
This time, not a collaboration, just relaunching our base collection.
Oh, cool.
And we're actually going to be showing something very, very exciting at the Quail.
What can we expect? Can you drop some hints?
Yes, it's definitely rodeo inspired.
Oh, nice.
And handmade inspired.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting maybe some leather, maybe some chaps for...
Oh, that's a great idea. maybe next year.
I think you need to develop some driving chaps. There's chaps driving for riding chaps. A horse, but...
You know, actually, one of my favorite fun facts about the rodeo is that the leather we use... is saddle leather.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's actually the true leather that is used when saddles are
That's so
are
cool.
Created.
I'm really excited. Is the rodeo going to be at the Quail?
Not only the rodeo, the first delivery rodeo. So our client is taking delivery of this car.
I've seen pictures of it everywhere, obviously, but seeing it up close is going to be a dream for me.
I'd love to show you.
Yeah. And then also happening at the Quail, you are debuting the production version of the Tribute as well,
yes.
right?
We passed our emissions tests this
yes.
year.
Yes, that's awesome.
Yeah. We showed it as a teaser 2 years ago.
Yeah.
In the meantime, there was a lot of work, but it was very successful. We now passed the emission test, and we bring it on the road.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
The engine is air-cooled, which is crazy to say in 2025.
Right.
I've heard a couple of specs about it. 550 wheel horsepower.
Right.
That's insane.
Yes.
4 cam.
And 3 valves.
Three valves.
Yeah.
Has that ever been done before?
No. Well, 3 valves and 2 cams exist with Mercedes. But the 4 cam version that we did is simply the reason we want to have the intake cam for the intake valves adjustable or timable. And that one is timable and it retards the intake valves in the area where you don't need the maximum power, where you are just under partial load and in idling, and you reduce the emissions.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
so
that
I bet
is
that
the
sounds
trick.
Insane yeah. when it hits those high revs.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And then,
oh my
of
God.
Course, when you go
I'm
to high revs, the 4 cam is also great.
That's, I mean, to grow up in this sort of situation and still have the passion that you have for the cars that you make is unbelievable. It's so cool. And
thank
I
you.
Envy, like I wish I could have grown up in that situation.
No, you have to come and visit us so we can play cars.
I'd love to.
Yeah,
the
come
tribute,
and see us.
Yes.
I'm so excited about it.
Yeah.
Bring your green shirt.
Yeah, bring your green shirt.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I might have someone embroider the roof logo on it. Have some bootleg merch. So going back to the car that put you on the map, the Yellowbird, did you set out with the aim to make the fastest car in the world? Or was it just kind of a byproduct of like, we want to make a really good car?
It was a combination. It was, we have been to the very first event in 1984, which was the first time that Road and Track put an event together, World's Fastest Cars. And it was Volume 1. And we won that.
Oh, that's awesome.
We won that. It was a big surprise because we didn't know what kind of an event it was.
Yeah.
Is it photo shooting? Is it a nice fun ride or what is it, joyride?
When you got that call, was it very surprising to be like, oh, Road and Track wants to test my car.
Yeah. No. This Road and Track first one, this Volume 1, was a very big surprise for everybody who participated. Nobody was prepared for a high-speed run, but we sort of were, because we brought extra tires with us, because I said, if they want to do speeds around 300 kilometers per hour, we want to make sure that the tire is perfect, that we don't have a tire blowout at high speed. And we had those fantastic drivers. It was Paul Freyr, Phil Hill, two world champions. And it was in northern Germany on the high-speed track of Volkswagen, you know, Era Lessine. And this is where the 917 was tested before.
Wow. This is our current events podcast, but we also have an automotive history podcast called Pass Gas.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite episodes ever was on Phil Hill. He led an amazing life, just was so intertwined, like one of the only American drivers trusted by Enzo Ferrari at the time.
Sure.
That is so amazing that those worlds collided, you know.
And Paul Freyr was the first driver that had the overall winning for Ferrari in 1959, yes.
Uh-huh. Dang, so that's crazy.
Two very, very prominent and important drivers.
Yeah.
It was great fun. Yellowbird was on the high-speed test number 2, volume 2, you know. And we finished the car just sort of on the last minute, because we had a date, 11th of April. And while we were driving there, we were testing the car on the Autobahn.
So you were breaking it in.
Yeah, breaking it in. we did break it in on the dyno before. We had it a couple of times over 300 kilometers, but it needed to be a lot more, obviously. And so we drove on the Autobahn, and we knew that if you calculate the tire circumference, the gear ratio, and the revs, the car theoretically should reach about 340.
Wow.
If we knew that, if it would get there. And then we were timing it, and we were driving it on the Autobahn in the middle of the night when everything was clear, and we had it at the rev limiter. Then we said it got to be close to 340. And it was.
So your calculations were correct.
Yeah, we reached 338.
Oh my God. That's got to be the best feeling in the world.
That was a great feeling.
Yeah.
And he performed on the next day.
Yeah. So
he
that
did
was.
The job.
And you also have done some high speed tests yourself,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, I make it myself too. I want to know how fast our cars go.
All of our cars are delivered. To this day, he test drives them.
You're the first one when it comes off the production line.
I still drive them. Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What's the fastest speed you've ever driven?
My fastest was 360. That would be 240 miles.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What car was that?
An RT12.
Wow.
Yeah, RT12S actually. Yeah.
That's crazy. What's your top speed?
Not even close.
You know you're going so fast you couldn't reach.
You shouldn't do that. Not yet.
You don't want to say it in front of dad. Well, that's amazing. Okay. I'm so excited for the debut of the tribute at the Quail and the new merch drop at the Quail as well. I'm excited to see some of that. And thank you, the Roof family, for joining me on this podcast.
The tribute is a huge piece of history coming back.
That's
awesome. We can open that book again.
That's so cool. And I feel like it's needed at this point in time.
Right.
Well, thank you so much,
Elisa. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you.
And thank you for watching. This has been an amazing, surreal moment for me. And check out the Roof Tribute. We'll see you next week.